Our Please Explain series is all about understanding and appreciating things in our everyday lives that we don't routinely give much thought to. And today's subject fits that description perfectly. We're going to be talking about pepper and other spices, and we hope that after you hear it, when you sit down to your next meal, you'll have a much richer and more detailed appreciation of the black powder or granules that sit in shakers on almost every table. Joining us now are Marjorie Schaefer, author of Pepper, A History of the World's Most Influential Spice. It's published by Macmillan. And we welcome back Andrew Smith, editor-in-chief of the Oxford Encyclopedia of Food and Drink in America. He teaches food studies at the New School University here in New York. And we invite you, our listeners, to join in on the conversation. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692 or write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Marjorie, what is the scientific name for pepper, at least the kind of pepper that we use on so many of our foods?
The scientific name is Piper nigrum, and it's I always think of it as a kind of musical family of spices.
And where does the word piper or pepper come from?
It's an ancient word. It comes from the Latin, and it has a Latin and Greek derivation.
Even though peppers don't come from Rome or Greece.
Supposedly Sanskrit in its
origin. Yeah, there is a Sanskrit version of it as well.
Because it originated in India?
Yes, it did, on the Malabar coast of India.
Doesn't pepper grow in clusters like grapes? Is it actually a fruit?
No, it's actually a berry, and it grows on a woody climbing vine. So it's not a fruit. It's actually a berry.
And then it's dried?
Yes, and then it's dried.
Now, Andrew, is pepper related in any way to the peppers we eat as vegetables? Green, red, orange,
oh, as
peppers,
wonderful
jalapenos.
As the capsicum peppers are, they're totally botanically unrelated.
And why would they give them the name? Simply because they add some kind of heat to foods?
It's because Christopher Columbus and other Europeans were looking for a shorter way to get to pepper, and they ran into chili peppers in the Caribbean and said, oh, man, chili peppers sound really good, but if we go back and tell them these are chili peppers, they won't buy it. So let's tell them we found pepper.
In both cases, they were quickly brought to other places and were grown everywhere else in the world. In the case of the pepper, we're talking about the spice, mostly in Asia for the early part of its history?
Yes. It loves tropical soils and only grows around a band around the equator. So that's one of the reasons why pepper was such a force in history, is that it can't be grown in many places.
But it started in India.
Yes, it started in India.
And then it was grown in parts of China, I imagine.
Yes, it did. And it traveled to Indonesia and Southeast Asia, along with the Arab traders who went east.
Aren't green, white, and black peppercorns pretty much the versions of the same plant?
They are. In fact, there's only one true pepper in the world, and that is Piper nigrum. And all of those other peppers, the white and the green and the black, and there are pink peppercorns, but that's some of the pink peppercorns we find in multicolored mixes of pepper today are actually from a totally different species.
So the green ones are the young ones. They're picked and dehydrated.
Yes.
And they're the mildest.
They're the mildest.
And then the black ones are left to mature.
A little later. And then the white ones are the ripest. They come when the berry turns red. And they're harvested, and actually the rind, so-called the coat of the pepper, is taken off.
And what about cayenne pepper? Is that totally different?
That is. That's a totally different kind of pepper.
But it's more like the pepper that we're talking about.
It's more like chili pepper, the cayenne peppers.
Andrew, the pepper's been called the king of spices because it has such a long history, but also because it's been used as a seasoning, a preservative, and even currency, wasn't it?
It's currency and as medicine. So it has a whole series of different uses historically. But it was the number one spice in ancient Rome and Greece, which is an incredible story. So All of the early evidence is that the pepper came in with ancient Greek. And Alexander the Great went to India and found long pepper and fell in love with it. And
so it wasn't Marco Polo.
And I'm sorry. Marco Polo may have done some things. We don't know for sure what he actually did, but not pepper, no.
No.
And didn't Alaric the Goth demand pepper as ransom for Rome at one point?
That's the rumor. Did you trace that through?
I traced that through Gibbons, who actually mentions it.
Decline and fall of the Roman Empire. But does he give a source on that? Gibbon made up lots of stories.
But why do you think it was considered that valuable?
Because there's nothing else like it in Europe. I mean, at the time, there's no spices in Europe. There are herbs, and the herbs tend to be relatively mellow. And so you bring this spice, pungent spice in, and it really excites everybody. And so it becomes very quickly, for at least the wealthy that can afford it, it becomes the number one spice in the ancient world.
I would assume that it also, because it was coming from India, which is close to Africa, it was introduced into Africa fairly early. Do we know?
There was actually Malaguenta pepper. It's a misnamed pepper. It's from a different species. But that was popular in Western Africa. And pepper was brought into Africa from the Arab traders, again, who were in India.
Right now, it's the most frequently used spice throughout the world, isn't it?
Yes, it is. By far.
Well, it depends on how you define that, because actually chili peppers by weight are sold. There are more of them sold by weight, but by quantity you're
by
absolutely
quantity,
right.
Yeah.
And by use universally.
Well, it's more widely used.
They don't come around to your table in a restaurant and hold up a chili pepper and say, would you like me to slice a couple of pieces? But they bring those huge pepper mills to your table and ask you if you want to have some pepper.
You've been going to the wrong restaurants. That's all I can say.
I just want to note that pepper is not a preservative. That's a
long-standing
myth, but it's not. And it wasn't used in medieval times to preserve rotting meat because people who could afford it and the wealthy ate fresh meat.
Because that was the story that I was told in my high school history class, that Europeans wanted it because meat was getting rotting and it covered up the flavor.
Nice story, but that's one of the myths.
In doing the research, did you find any other nice stories that turned out to either be true or not true, but that most of us wouldn't have known about?
In my research, one of the more surprising stories I found was how pepper helped shore up the economy of the United States in the early 1800s. And the port of Salem was actually a major pepper port.
And you say pepper was the cause of the first armed intervention by the United States in Southeast Asia?
That's correct. Yes, and President Jackson ordered a warship to Sumatra to bomb the natives because they had the temerity to rob one of the pepper ships.
My guests are Marjorie Schaefer, author of Pepper, A History of the World's Most Influential Spice, and Andrew Smith, editor-in-chief of the Oxford Encyclopedia of Food and Drink in America. We're talking about pepper on today's Please Explain. And inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also write us on our show page at WNYC.org and on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Wasn't pepper also involved in the opium trade in India?
Yes, it was. It was first traded, the Dutch first traded opium for pepper in India, and it was then used in Indonesia, especially in Sumatra, because the natives wanted, they became accustomed and wanted opium, and they traded pepper for it.
And the man Yale is named after was in the pepper trade?
Yes, he was. Elihu Yale was actually a pepper trader.
Now, Andrew, we have established that pepper really is not a preservative, but Doesn't it have what can be described as medicinal properties?
Well, that's what it was claimed from ancient times on. But does it really have any medicinal properties? My answer is no. I don't know if you came out with a different conclusion on this. You did.
Okay. I did. There's at least 300 studies that are underway that are looking at the potential medicinal properties of pepper, especially because it has this alkaloid called piperine, which gives pepper its giant kick. And there's nothing definitive yet, but there's certainly a lot of interest, and surprisingly, among Western scientists, in its anti-cancer properties.
It's an antioxidant?
It's not a great antioxidant, but it can amplify the effects of other drugs.
Yeah, my concern is that the amount of pepper that most of us consume is so low that, at least in a normal diet, that
correct.
It really wouldn't. One should not be putting pepper on and thinking this is going to help me fight cancer or something like
absolutely
that.
Absolutely true. That's absolutely right.
Listeners have been writing and asking about the health benefits. Many of them assume that pepper. It does help, including one person who said it multiplies the health benefits of, turmeric. When you combine it with turmeric, it makes turmeric 1,000 times more powerful. And turmeric has been definitely established as something that helps fight certain cancers.
Yeah, and the chemical structure of curcumin,
Or is it turmeric? I never remember. Turmeric?
I know.
Either way.
It's turmeric, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay.
They resemble each other. There's like a chemical composition of each of piperine and curcumin, which is the chemical active in turmeric. So they do think that it acts together.
Jeff from Seattle has written us. He said, I had a biology teacher professor in undergraduate school who did a lot of research in the rainforest, and he said he refused to allow pepper in his home because of its contribution to destroying the rainforest.
Well,
have you heard anything like that?
It certainly has. The pepper industry has expanded rapidly in Vietnam and in Indonesia, and to a large extent in Brazil. And
yeah.
So there are concerns on that. Yeah.
When we talk about the spice trade, are we talking mostly about pepper, or are we talking about a number of different spices?
There are many different spices that were engaged in the spice trades. And again, it was Asian spices going to Europe, and that was the basis of the trade. But pepper was certainly, from a quantitative standpoint, the most important one. But from a standpoint of money, it wasn't. So there were many other spices that were much more valuable. Saffron, historically, as well as today, being the obvious one, the most expensive spice on the market, at least the most expensive spice that you can buy in a supermarket.
Well, it's harder to grow saffron.
It's harder
than
to grow
than pepper. Pepper is grown all over the world.
Yeah,
now,
if you have a tropical area,
yeah,
you can grow,
along the equator, it's grown in a band all over the world. Yeah,
you only have three spices from the New World, and chili peppers are one, vanilla's one, and I forgot now.
Allspice
is the third one.
Yeah.
So it really it is this all of a sudden this pungency and this aroma and this flavors that come out of these spices are just really exciting to Europeans at the time that it enters into the Middle Ages, late Middle Ages, and the Renaissance, and so that's why it becomes so important.
My guests are Andrew Smith, editor-in-chief of the Oxford Encyclopedia of Food and Drink in America. He teaches food studies at the New School University. And Marjorie Schaefer, who is the author of Pepper, A History of the World's Most Influential Spice, which is published by Macmillan. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, take some of your calls. Our number is 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We're back with today's Please Explain Look at Pepper with Andrew Smith, editor-in-chief of the Oxford Encyclopedia of Food and Drink in America. He also teaches food studies at the New School University. And Marjorie Schaefer, whose book, Pepper, A History of the World's Most Influential Spice, is published by Macmillan. I wonder why pepper, all the peppers, and I'm going to include the peppers from the New World, have become so important to food. What is it about the heat that that appeals to humans so much?
Well, there's a whole series of different answers to it. I mean, the obvious one is most food until the 19th century was boring. I mean, it was really bland, and all of a sudden you had some really exciting new entries, of which spices in general, but pepper in particular, the pungency there really is an exciting thing. The second thing is, from a culinary standpoint, the pungency, once it goes away, you have this really warm feeling over you, at least I do. Mm-hmm. And so it really gives a very satisfying feeling after you've consumed it.
And then with the Columbian Exchange, the peppers from the New World wound up being grown all over the world. We have Italian peppers. It's a basic ingredient in Turkish cuisine. And, of course, in Asian cuisines, in China, in Sichuan and Hunanese cooking, and, of course, in Thailand, peppers have taken on a life of their own, all starting originally from Mesoamerica.
And immediately after Europeans arrived in Mesoamerica, they introduced chili peppers into Europe. From Europe, they went into Turkey, and they went into Hungary. And from Hungary, they went into China. And within 50 years, they're consumed in China and later then in Southeast Asia.
So we associate cayenne with Hungary, even though its origins, in a way, are from Mesoamerica.
Yes.
But they all have mutated to be quite different. Is it the same with black pepper, the pepper that it's all the same no matter where it's grown?
Yeah, I mean, that was the intriguing thing to me about pepper. And that's why my book is Pepper and not Peppers. It really is just Piper nigrum. It's just black pepper.
Wherever it is grown.
I mean, there is cubeb pepper, which is from Java, and which is a much more pungent kind of pepper and has a little tail on it. But it's still Piper nigrum.
People have been writing. Go ahead.
But there are different flavors within that. So the white pepper, the green pepper, the red pepper, and the black pepper really do have a different aroma and different pungency. So there are some diversity within.
Oh, absolutely. There's flavor diversity, but there isn't in terms of just, you know, diversifying within the pepper itself. It doesn't have different shapes or sizes.
I always thought that white pepper was simply used for aesthetic reasons because you didn't want to have little black flecks in food that was light-colored.
That's also true, but it's hotter. It has greater pungency, and to me it has a better aroma. But
yeah, it does, and I actually brought some white pepper with me today, and it does have a different kind of aroma.
And it's nothing to sneeze at.
Yes, good question. Why do we sneeze when we consume it? And the answer is no one knows
sure.
In fact, a listener, Nicole on Twitter, asked, why does pepper make some people like me choke when it's sprinkled on top of food, but not when it's cooked in the food?
Well, it loses some of its potency when it is cooked. So I imagine that would be the reason why.
It also loses potency if it's ground and then left ground. Is it better to always buy pepper in the peppercorn and then grind it yourself?
I believe so, yes.
Absolutely. If you want the flavor and if you want the aroma and you want the pungency for it, solid peppercorns are much better than buying it ground.
Now, Tom wrote this on our show page. Daniel Borstein in The Discoverers claims that salt and pepper have come down to us as table mates because it was used to ameliorate the gag reflex that kicked in from food heavily preserved in salt.
I think there are a lot of different theories about why salt and pepper are mates. I don't know that anyone has a definitive answer to that.
And I'd love to see Borstein's footnotes on that topic.
Salt
is a common condiment that's been used for thousands of years. So I don't see that being brought down to us for a particular reason.
And they do work well together.
They do.
I think that is the reason why you find salt and pepper together. It's just that they work well together. And pepper is ubiquitous. You know, it's very common spice. And it can be very subtle, and it can mix well with any kinds of spices.
But it's not the one that's being referred to when we say little girls are made of sugar and spice and everything nice.
No, those are sweet spices.
Those are sweet.
Come on.
Yeah.
Sheldon asks, like other spices, how has the taste and quality of the peppercorn suffered due to mass production?
In my opinion, it's improved. I mean, mass production keeps it in a preserved way that historically it would have gone much less pungent, had much less aroma, simply because of the way it was traded and saved. And today it is saved and traded in a way that preserves it. So in my opinion, it's probably better.
Yeah.
Let's take a call. Our number here is 212-433-9692. Lance from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I've been to Cambodia a number of times, and you might be aware of this, but there's a village there called Kempat, and I was told that all the best kitchens in Paris had pepper from Kempat at one time, probably because the French, you know, had it as a colony. But I brought back 2 kilos of black pepper from there because there are plantations all over the place. And it's like gold. It's the best thing I've ever tasted, and I give it to people for holidays or birthdays, and I have a handful left.
And how is it better than the kind of pepper that you would assume I'd have in my house?
Which I bought at Fairway. It just bursts with incredible flavor. I've never tasted any pepper like it. I've tried lots of peppers, you know, from the stores and markets, and it's just like, wow, it's really something. And it seems like more people ought to know about that because they could have a great export.
Well, but we don't have Cambodian pepper in the United States, so...
I know. Yeah. I mean, they should get it here somehow. It's really great.
Okay, thank you.
I wonder if your guests know anything about it. It seems like they, you know, they...
Do you?
Well, I know that there's a lot of pepper grown in Vietnam. It's one of the
world's largest... It's the largest country for pepper production in the modern world. It wouldn't surprise me that Cambodia would do it either, but yeah. I've never heard of imported Cambodian
peppers. I haven't found it anywhere. I haven't found Cambodian pepper anywhere.
A caller read recently in the New York Times that pepper can be associated with salmonella because of the time-honored drying process on mud, and now they're trying to put it on concrete instead, he says. Is that true?
Yeah, there was an article actually in the New York Times about this.
That's what he's citing.
That's what he's citing, yeah, for salmonella poisoning, yeah.
So there are people who are getting salmonella from just putting some pepper in their food?
I only know what I actually read in the Times. I can't attest to that.
A caller who grew up in West Africa says that everyone there eats peppery foods, including hot pepper soup, when they're sick because of the pepper's high vitamin C content. I guess he's talking about...
Chili peppers or African peppers.
Yeah.
Which all originated in Mesoamerica. Or did they originate in South America and then move up?
All chili peppers in Mesoamerica. So it's Central North America and Central America and northern part of South America.
Yeah.
But there is a pepper in Africa, and it is that which was certainly the original spicy pepper for Africans. But as soon as the chili pepper went in there through the Columbian Exchange, you immediately had adoption of chili peppers.
Yeah. Now, Marjorie, you brought some peppers here
in little
plastic bags. I'm holding them up, and I don't see all that much difference, a little variation in color. How different are these? What would you bring? Five different ones?
Yeah, I brought telecherry pepper from Malabar, which is considered the world's best pepper.
And that, you said, Malabar is where it started.
It's where it started on the west coast.
So this is kind of like heirloom pepper?
Sort of. It's certainly the most expensive. And I brought some white pepper so that we could at least smell the difference between, and if we wanted to taste the difference between telecherry and white pepper. I brought Sichuan pepper, which is not pepper at all. Sichuan pepper is actually from a tree, and it's the dried berries from a tree. And I believe I brought
some... But does it taste like a pepper?
It is very pungent. It is quite spicy. Very pungent.
It's typically used in Chinese food.
Yeah.
So if you go into a Chinese restaurant, that will be one of the spicy and pungent ingredients.
And that one, if you open the little bag there, you'll get a nice hit of great spice.
And sneeze.
Yeah. And what else? I also brought one that's like a regular pepper so that we could, if we wanted to, compare it to the telecherry.
Well, we have apples in the other room that were brought by a previous guest. I wonder if pepper and apples go well together.
We have peppery apple. Sounds good.
Why
Let's
not?
Give it a try.
Yeah.
We're seeing peppers now being used in desserts as well.
Yeah.
Is that a change?
Well, it's been there for at least 300 or 400 years. So the idea of sweet and peppery is an interesting combination that's now coming to fore today.
Yeah.
So it's different. It's something different. It's something new and something very creative. So
yeah.
A caller wonders how long you can keep peppercorns before they start losing their pungency.
For a long time. I don't exactly know, but if you keep them as peppercorns and keep them in a dry place, I think they can last at least 6 months to a year.
Yeah, I was going to say a year in my case.
Well, that's the big problem. You have to go through your spice rack.
Yeah, you got to throw stuff out
every year and say,
I spent a lot of money.
When did I buy
that?
This very expensive thing in this large jar that I used twice? Sean left this comment on our show page. He said, I have had the pleasure of trying long pepper, Piper longum.
Yes, Piper longum.
It's like black pepper, but maybe a little hotter with some earthy and sweet notes. If you see it in the spice aisle, I recommend that you try it if you like black pepper. He says it's an interesting change of pace.
It's the same species. It's just a different variety, and it's very good. I like it.
Piper longum actually in one of those plastic bags. And it's a little hard to grind, but it is wonderful to smell.
And it is typically part of Indian cuisine,
yes.
So particularly northern Indian cuisine where it originated. And that was the first pepper, by the way, that goes into Europe. So it is long pepper that excites the Greeks and the Romans.
Yeah.
So if you're being a purist, would you have different peppers for different recipes?
Absolutely. Sure. I think you would. And you would know which peppers are best for certain kinds of foods, and you can experiment and really enjoy your food more, I think.
Well, there are associations with ethnic cuisines and the peppers. And so if you go to India, you will have long pepper, which would be a common pepper in the north, although it wouldn't be overwhelming like it is with us. I don't know if they have it on their tables or not, but it would be there. If you go to China, you will not really have black pepper in the same quantities that we would have here. You really have Chinese pepper.
Yeah.
So that would be a part of that. And if you go to Indonesia, you'll have a variety of peppers depending on where you are. So, and if you go obviously to Central and South America, you will find chili peppers about number one.
Right.
So you have great diversity.
But all of them adding a certain amount of heat to the food or...
Yes.
Yeah.
Why would you want them if they didn't have heat?
Yeah.
You're smiling, looking at me strangely. I like heat.
An animal study in 2010 showed that visceral fat reduced significantly in a group that was fed black pepper and its extract, piperine. So it can actually help in weight loss?
I would say no. Those studies really are on the outer fringe, and they need to be verified by many, many more studies. So the weight loss connection, I don't think, works at all.
Weight loss is based on calories in and calories out.
Yeah.
And if consuming pepper makes you consume less calories, then it would work.
Then you would never, then people in India would never get fat.
What is piperine?
The pungent ingredient within pepper.
Uh-huh. And it's extracted from pepper. And what is it used? Is it used in cooking?
It is not used by itself in cooking because it's part of the peppercorn. So it's just it's the chemical in peppercorns that gives that kick to the taste.
And in cooking, you can use pepper in a lot of different ways. You can grind it fine. You can crack it, and you get different responses in the food.
Or you can put the peppercorns in and let them soak, and they add a different flavor, too. Yeah, there's lots of ways you can use pepper.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both so much for being on our show and talking about pepper on today's Please Explain. My guests have been Marjorie Schaefer, whose book, Pepper, A History of the World's Most Influential Spice, is published by Macmillan. Andrew Smith, editor-in-chief of the Oxford Encyclopedia of Food and Drink in America.